cloud is all about choice. Take full advantage of multi-cloud with Couchbase, a geo-distributed, cloud-native data platform built to power your business-critical applications. Avoid cloud lock-in and open up a world of possibility. Start a revolution with Couchbase. Learn more at couchbase.com/cloud.
Hello and welcome to the InfoQ podcast. My name is Wes Rice and I'm the host of the InfoQ podcast. I also get the incredible privilege to chair a set of software conferences called QCon. QCon is a software conference for senior developers and architects. They are based in San Francisco, London, and New York. The next one is in New York. If you'll be around the New York area on June 25th, 26th, 27th through the 29th, be sure to check us out. Today, we're talking to Anastasia Vitova, known as Vixen Tal in the security communities. She started her career as a mobile application developer and in recent years has moved over to focus mainly on designing and developing cryptographic software. So on today's podcast, we're going to talk about that experience, about moving into cryptography. We're going to talk a bit about how to design libraries to be usable by developers and how to design boring cryptographic libraries. We'll also talk a bit about her upcoming talk at QCon New York. That talk is called Making Security Usable, a Project Engineering Perspective. So today is a fun podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Anastasia, welcome to the InfoQ podcast.
Hey, hello. It's really a pleasure to be part of this.
So tell me about it. You started off as a mobile application developer and moved into cryptography. What appealed to you about cryptographic libraries?
Yeah, it might sound a little bit unusual, right? It's true. I was doing iOS applications like for years, 6 or 7 years in a row. And, you know, making iOS applications is really exciting, but you're super dependent on the platform itself. And the bad thing is that there are a lot of people who start using your apps. Well, it is also exciting, but again, and at some point I realized that a lot of mobile developers, me as well, we don't actually care about user privacy or user security, like data security at all, because we have a belief that Apple cares about all the data or Google cares about all the data, and rarely we put some extra effort. And as I said before, amount of applications starts growing and amount of people who are using these applications was growing. I understand how it works, and I understand that when I use any app and I put my sensitive data there, I'm not sure if the sensitive data is properly or like properly processed and properly operated. So I will start digging, like, you know, understanding the difficulties and the limits of the platform, going deep into security and making some educational talks for my fellow developers, like mobile developers, about security concepts. But suddenly, you cannot just make the application secure, okay, it's super secure, without making the whole infrastructure secure. Because mobile apps, they don't live in vacuum, right? They often have some kind of server side, some kind of server side database, or maybe even cloud database, which like really mobile developers prefer just to put data somewhere on like Firebase. And even putting some efforts inside the app, but forgetting about the whole infrastructure, won't make your product super secure, being honest. So like I was switching from only mobile to development of the whole product, including server side, and it happened that on some point I was more interested in actually securing the things than on adding more and more and more and more user features. That's the story.
So what are you working on today? You're working on security products, but what's the focus of
it? Yeah, now I'm working in a cryptography company. It's even more narrow than just security because we actually create different kinds of cryptographic software. Some of this software is open source and free to use, and some of things we sell as a licenses to solve use cases of data security. And as a product engineer, I write code. First of all, I'm super happy about it because I'm still coding. Of course, now I'm coding on more complicated languages like on C, on Go, because cryptography, you know. The thing is that all our software, it has some kind of crypto core, as we say so, which is often written on C, but it won't be usable from client applications, from real applications, if it's just a C core. So it has to have a lot of wrappers, a lot of high-level libraries around. And this is where I actually put my efforts to, like in, to including my beloved mobile part, to create some wrappers for our C course for like for other platforms. But the main, maybe the main, just engineering part, but the main focus is how people use the software. And having the, a lot of like, friends from development community, I can see how they use, how what they actually think about making their app secure, and what are limits for them, what are barriers that they have, that they see in their work. And I can, like, I ask them questions, I do some kind of user interviews with them, trying to solve their difficulties and trying to make our software, our like high-level functions, our crypto API more usable, more understandable for developers.
So when you talk about writing cryptographic libraries, what does that mean? Are you talking about libraries that sit underneath like an API abstraction? So when I make over-the-wire calls, I'm using cryptographic tools. Help me understand, where does this library fit into the traditional mobile application developer talking to an API that talks to a database? Where does it fit in the entire stack?
I would say it's a middleware. Because, of course, we don't implement our own crypto, well, you know, this mantra. So as a crypto providers, we use like OpenSSL, BoardingSSL, BearSSL, and so on. But what we basically do is making OpenSSL easier to use, like solving exact use case. For example, Lipsodium. You know Lipsodium, and you know that they have this nice abstract, this nice secure box. If you want to store data securely, put it into secure box. What they do there, they add symmetric encryption and they add integrity checks. So as a developer, you don't need to write it on your own. You just need to put data in the secure box. And we operate on the like on the same, on a similar level. We make it more easy for developers to solve their high-level use cases. Like storing data securely, like transferring data securely.
But really, that's just using the API, right? The developer just uses an API like they would any other API. It's not something specifically that they have to focus on crypto, right? Or is it?
Well, as example, I can talk about IIS. Well, you know, IIS encryption. Mostly to use IIS encrypt or decrypt functions from OpenSSL, you need to understand what is a key. What to define the key length. Then you need to define the mode, like the symmetric cipher mode, which can be, there are five of them, CBC, GCM, CTR, etc., etc. You need to define padding and init vector. All these parameters you need to put into the function that actually encrypts piece of data. And these are a lot of things where you need to make your decision and where you can actually like make a mistake. Because developers don't have this cryptographic knowledge mostly, and they don't know what is padding and what kind of padding to use. And using wrong padding can lead you to Oracle padding attack. So we hide all these complicated cryptography things, and we have an event function encrypt and decrypt. And developers can be sure that the key is long enough. It's IIS in GCM mode, so it's strong enough. It's modern. Init vector is right. The padding is right, etc., etc., etc. All these complicated tiny bits are solved for you. All you need to do is just add, encrypt, and decrypt.
So how do you go about that? How do you know it's right? How do you design it to be right?
That's why we have real cryptography PhD in our company. So the people who are educated to design cryptographic software and cryptographic like, systems, who have certifications, who did a lot of audits of other cryptographic software, etc., etc. But at the same time, we do a lot of things open source. Because in security, you cannot be sure that something is secure if it's not open source, especially when it's a security library, right? So we publish everything and we attract security community to review. And we post white papers based on things we create. And, you know, we attract all this, like, we ask people to audit our stuff because you cannot be sure. Like, all of them are paranoid.
So what your library does, for example, at Cossack Labs is you'll take a library and you'll have certain settings like padding and things. You define what is good enough And then you wrap that so developer calls it as the most accurate type settings already configured. It's not like something that figures out based on what you're doing what the settings should be. Is that right?
Right. So developers, they have some kind of use case they want to solve, like store data preserving Linux. And we have a one function they can use. All store data, like store data securely, I mean encrypted, without any Linux restrictions. For example, divide access to data so you can share it to different parties. I mean, encrypt the data in specific way so the data is stored encrypted, but still you can share access to some pieces of this data. These are high-level use cases. And to solve these use cases, we provide like high-level functions so developers don't need to understand what's going on under the hood. But of course, as I said before, it's all open source.
And then what about for developers that are more expert level? You provide abstractions to be able to get in there to make changes as well, I'm assuming?
We provide a lot of security-oriented documentation because we understand that our target audience, some of them are like just application developers and they don't care about all the details, but some of our audience are security experts and they need to understand what's going on and they're curious. So we have different kind of like documentations for them. And yes, this is part of our software has license that can be, that developers can change. I mean, go deep inside, change something, and we are okay with that. Some of our software don't allow you to change it. So it depends.
Earlier, I talked a bit about this stack where you might have a mobile application with a RESTful API that you're talking to that's hosted on maybe AWS and it's using some persistent data store in the back end. What's like the most common cryptographic mistakes that people make in that kind of architecture?
On this topic, I can talk really hours and hours and hours, so you should stop me at some point. Because I saw so many things and I made so many mistakes on my own, like literally. Okay, so I think the first mistake is the whole understanding of cryptography and security. I mean, cryptography is just one of aspects of data security. It won't solve everything. And sometimes people believe that if they like encrypt the data, they are fine. No. There are so many other things that can go wrong, like operation security, organization security, access control, I mean like authentication. So the first mistake is just understanding that cryptography is not a magic tool to solve everything, but a tool that can help you to solve most of cases. The second mistake, when we're talking about like cryptography, exactly about data security, is defining the data scope. Because it's easy to think about user data, about business data, especially in mobile apps where developers understand how users will use their app. But there are some things that developers often forget about, like technical data. All these IP addresses, geolocation data, meta data from pictures, you know, all these logs are important, all this technical data that your system, your product is collecting, and usually no one deletes this data, so it starts for like for ages. And sometimes this data can also be sensitive, like not all of them, but so the defining the data scope. Then even, and of course the regulations, HIPAA, PCI DSS, GDPR, some data, like people often forget about what exactly the regulations mean in their case, and maybe that this exact function or this exact piece of data should also be protected according to the regulations. The next, if the data scope is defined correctly, like we hope so, and for example, we decide to, I don't know, encrypt data at rest. The second mistake is selecting the encryption algorithms. That's why previously I talked that it's good when libraries can hide these implementation details, but a lot of libraries, they don't hide. And for some libraries, you can still select like MD5 for hashing. I mean, it's 2018. MD5, really? There are a lot of libraries that suggest you to use old and vulnerable crypto, like crypto algorithms for hashing, for encrypting. So the second mistake is selecting the wrong crypto algorithm. And here you actually need to have some kind of security knowledge to understand, like, what is the state of the art, right? What should be used right now? But even if the algorithm is selected correctly, third, all these parameters that you should put in to get the strong results. And the third mistake, again, talking about usual libraries, you have all these params and you put all the things in, but it's easy to make mistakes. I often show one of the research. People have analyzed like 300 vulnerabilities from the applications and divided these vulnerabilities into two groups. One of the groups are vulnerabilities caused by crypto libraries, like some mistakes inside crypto libraries. And another group are vulnerabilities caused by misusing crypto libraries. And of course, this is like the second group is the majority of issues. 80-something percent of issues are mistakes or vulnerabilities that are caused by misusing crypto libraries. So it's really important to understand that even defining the data scope, selecting the algorithms, you still can misuse the thing and your super secure system will just break into, fall into parts.
You said that like 80% of the vulnerabilities are caused by misusing cryptographic libraries. What are some of those examples?
Yeah, I will send you a link on this research because it's really interesting to read, and they provide you a code pieces where like making super easy mistakes in code can open a vulnerability. But I mean, I think the most easiest example is that I mentioned before, just wrong parameters for crypto algorithms. And what is important to understand next is that encryption is all about keys. So even using the right crypto algorithm with right parameters, you can still put your encryption key near the encrypted data. And I mean, that's all. So key management is the second, like the fourth important step or important or most common mistake some developers do. And key management is super complicated. It's not only about generating a key, or it's not only about user password as a key, which is a bad idea, right? It's also about like storing keys. I heard so many systems that just encrypt user passwords instead of hashing. I mean, again, 2018, encrypting user passwords, like why? Again, generating key, storing key, key revocation. On the stage of designing our system, we should understand if our keys can be revoked, if our keys can be expired. What are backups keys? Because you heard maybe the story with WhatsApp. I saw a screenshot in Twitter like today about WhatsApp that uses end-to-end encryption to encrypt all the chats. But backups it puts on Google Cloud, I think, the backups are not encrypted. So it's a common mistake, really. It's a common mistake. And what I often ask developers when they ask me to help, I'm asking them, come on, people, do you have backups? Yes, of course, we do have backups. Do you encrypt? No. Security is complicated.
So what do you recommend with key management? I mean, like all the cloud vendors have some tool for managing keys. Is that enough? Do you recommend something else? What about if you're not in a cloud environment? What are your thoughts on key management for developers?
Maybe it will sound rude, but maybe I think that key management is kind of out. It's not responsibility of developers only. So in a perfect case scenario, the company should have some kind of security team and somebody like the product architect that is responsible for the whole architecture of the thing. It's not up to application developers to decide like where to put keys and how to manage keys. I'm just saying that it's really important, okay? And we really need to pay attention to this. But if it's your responsibility, then yes, of course, there are many this key storage providers you can use. You can also build public key infrastructure for your like for your product, for your company, internal, but it requires maybe more efforts. And maybe for developers, the most useful advice is not to hard code key in a code, to separate code and keys, right? To put keys to different file and like don't commit this file, don't add this file to your source control. Keep an eye on someone who accesses this file. So in a perfect world, you have some kind of key storage, and every access, every entry to this key storage is locked.
Earlier, we talked a bit about you came from the mobile world and then moved into cryptography. Any tips that you would tell your like previous self on cryptography when it comes to developing mobile applications?
I wish I read all these exciting cryptographic books before.
Like what? What do you recommend?
I really recommend Serious Cryptography. So Serious Cryptography is amazing. Jean-Philippe Ormasson. I'm sorry, I'm really bad in reading French. So like you can Google it by Serious Cryptography. So it's a book that is super easy to read, literally super easy to read. It has a lot of useful examples and code pieces, and it's all about cryptography from basics, from discussing what is random, what is like pseudo-random, right? Why it's important for cryptography, how to calculate the entropy. So from these basic aspects to modern cryptography, to all these popular ciphers, to elliptic curves, like how to understand elliptic curves cryptography, to quantum computing. And I would really recommend people who are into security and into cryptography to read it, because it's amazing.
Okay, but tell me, how does that help you as a mobile developer?
I would quit mobile development applications earlier.
That's what you would tell yourself.
Because there are so many like other exciting things in the world. I mean, now I feel that I have some impact, and to making these security tools, cryptography tools, I can actually affect many mobile applications and many users in a good way.
But you can affect them right now. What are some tips that you would tell them that you're writing mobile applications, this is something you need to think about from a developer perspective? What is that? What is it that you would tell that mobile developer if you could reach the largest number today about make sure you're checking this?
I would discuss the trust, because in a mobile world, we have to trust the vendor, the platform, right? We trust Apple, we trust Google. And by this, I mean that Apple has their ways of securing data, like securing Clay, for example, or Keychain. And every time developer says, hi, I'm okay, I will put keys to Keychain, which is perfectly normal, but they should understand that you trust Apple. And you trust all these Apple security mechanisms. And if device is jailbroken, everything you put into Keychain can be read. So if your application has some sensitive data inside, I mean, if you operate with really sensitive data, maybe for your case, you should not trust Apple only, and you should add some security measures, which you define, which your system defines. But of course, some applications don't need this overthinking, and it's okay. It all depends on risk modeling and security requirements. If your application is like, you know, Instagram for kittens, you don't need all these measures, and it's okay. It's okay. And maybe about SSL. Like, SSL is not enough. So, okay, people, if you're doing application, I understand that when we're talking about web, it's complicated, but when you're doing applications, SSL is not enough. Even SSL pinning is not enough. So SSL pinning, like when you pin your server certificate and you check, after SSL handshake, you check that the certificate that the server provides you is the same that you have in your app. So it's kind of, this is really your server and you can set connection with them. So even SSL pinning is unfortunately not enough.
So what's up then? If you're using SSL pinning, it that's a lot. That's what a lot of developers think of today as being good enough. What more should you be doing?
Again, depending on your use case. So for some people, like SSL is enough, SLP is enough, but building extra like security channel between you and the server, mutual authentication, because like often these mobile infrastructures, the server side doesn't recognize what kind of device, what kind of client application is being connected. And that's why we can make all these nice bots, like Tinder bot, Instagram bot, Facebook bot, using just the API from the apps. So pretending to be a real application, right? Because the server side doesn't authenticate the app side. So adding like plus to SSL pinning, adding a mutual authentication, like authenticate client, is a huge plus. Then building extra like encryption channel for sending super sensitive data, like add one more layer of encryption based on, for example, on user keys. If we're talking about something user specific, we can generate key based derived from some user properties, from user password, and encrypt data and send this data encrypted over SSL, I would say so.
We've been talking to Anastasia Volta, Vixintail, in the security communities. If you want to hear more from Anastasia, she'll be talking at QCon New York. Again, her talk is Making Security Usable, Product Engineering Perspective, and she promises to lay out how to solve all your key management problems in your microservice environment. So be sure to come by and say hi and check her out at QCon New York. Anastasia, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you.